I wouldn't say we fell in love right away. I think we were, as they call it in the biz, trauma bonding.
And then after 8 years of being insufferably sober, I started drinking again.
Addicts tend to be rather sensitive people.
Aren't you Marc Maron? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, what happened to you?
Hey, you guys, this is Anna David. I'm the host of Recover Girl, the podcast you are currently listening to. Hey. Thanks so much for listening. If you're new to the show, it's a podcast that is about addiction and recovery, but it has a funny bent. I like to think it is. It does. I can't speak, and as a method of self-acceptance, I'm not going to stop recording this, and I'm just going to keep going. My entire career has basically been about sharing my dark to find my light. And by light, I mean not just the kind of light that Leonard Cohen was talking about when he said, there's a crack in everything. That's where the light comes in. But also lighthearted. I'm a big fan of the funny. So I have a storytelling show, and this episode you're about to listen to is a snippet from one of those shows. What else do I want to tell you? Speaking of sharing your dark to find your light, that was my washer that just went off. I have a list of happiness hacks, a free cheat sheet that I have written, which I want to give to you. You can have it if you go to AnnaDavidCoaching.com. It is yours. You are officially a light hustler. Yeah, that's someone who shares their dark to find their light. Anyway, moving on. My guest on this episode, which is to say the person you're going to hear telling his story live, is a truly unique individual. He wrote a hilarious novel about addiction. I just realized you're probably going to hear this twice, since you're going to hear me introduce him in the live show. Doesn't matter. He's written a bunch of books. He writes self-help, also funny novels, also poetry. One of his self-help books is called Get Up, a 12-step guide to recovery for misfits, freaks, and weirdos. This is Bucky Sinister.
Hey, guys. It's good to see you all. Oh, hi. It's good to see you all here. I got a haircut today. I put in my best teeth for you guys. Yeah, actually, they're permanent, but they're not the ones I was born with. These are all store-bought. And I blame the 90s meth on that. Bad 90s meth. Not like that good 80s meth. That stuff in the 80s was a lot better. I don't know what it was. It was a lot more innocuous. Back then, you know, you just did about 1988, you just did a line of meth, and then it was like, I think Motley Crue sounds pretty good. That's about all that happened to you. And then the 90s was when all that weird, like, let's put tinfoil over the windows and get cat whisker tattoos. That started then. I have 14 of my original teeth left, and I really only did about 3 or 4 teeth worth of meth. I think someone owes me more meth. Give me the teeth back or something. I don't think it was a fair exchange. I really don't. But I wanted to talk tonight. I am coming up on a strange anniversary, which you guys will probably relate to. I'm coming up on the 30th anniversary of my first intervention. There you go. It'll be early next year. It'll be that time, and I'm going to have a big party for it. I'm taking my whole family to Circus Circus. Why there, you might think? Well, that's because that's where they told me we were all going when they took me to rehab. It'll be good. Get a little comeback for him. I was 19 years old, and I was working this horrible job in a trophy company, a trophy warehouse in St. Louis. It was nothing makes you feel more like a loser than assembling trophies for winners all day, And it was just like these huge, like, garbage sacks of little gold guys and cutting those big pieces of wood down to little things and putting them all together. And I was making like $5 an hour. It was a union job, too. I had to pay dues on top of that. And then I was like, you know, fuck it. One day I was like, fuck it. I'm going to move to Los Angeles. And people are like, oh, what are you going to do there? I'm like, I don't know, maybe there's a job that's shitty there. So, but I had like all summer long while I was saving the money, the rest of the money to move, I was thinking like, I'm going to move to LA and I'm going to hang out with Johnny and Winona at the Chateau Marmont. And, you know, I'm going to read them my poems and they're going to think they're real deep and it's going to be real cool. And then they'll be like, you got to meet our friend Sean Penn. He's friends with Bukowski. And I'm like, really? And then I'll know that all the time, but I'll play dumb. And then, you know, whatever. And then, you know, Sean Penn will take me to Bukowski's house. And I think it'd be cool. And, like, he's going to be like, yeah, this kid's got it. You know? And, yeah, so I thought that's how it was going to go. And then I got here, and I was not hanging out with them. I was hanging out with a guy named Brett, who worked at a stereo store in the mall as a cover for his coke dealing job. And so he had a $2,000 Alpine stereo and a $2,000 Ford Escort. That's just how it rolled. But it was the first car I ever saw that had a CD player in it. But he only had one CD, and it was Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. So we listened to that as we drove around Westwood, like delivering 8 balls to college kids. Not really as glamorous as they thought, but I was in LA. It was pretty cool. And then my family calls me and like, hey, we're gonna have a big family vacation. Like, we're gonna have a big getting all these different members. Your mom, your sisters are coming. Everybody, maybe some of your cousins too. We're just inviting the whole family. We're gonna go to Circus in Reno. I'm like, man, that sounds cool. And they're like, we'll get you a plane ticket and everything. I'm like, man, my family's really coming around. Like, I thought they, you know, like, I thought they were sick of my shit. And so I'm like, oh, cool. And, you know, so I'm hanging out with Brett and telling him, like, you know, and the plane, they get the plane ticket. The flight is at some ungodly hour. It's at like 9 o'clock in the morning. And so I'm like, how the fuck are you going to get up that early? You know what I mean? Like, what the hell is that? You know, you can't even get up that early. You have to, like, the best thing to do is stay up all night. Right? Like, that's the only solution here. Stay up on it. So we're, you know, doing coke on it. And I'm just like, he's like, where are you going? I'm like, all right, going to Circus Circus. He's like, you know what's the perfect drug to do at Circus Circus? And I'm like, what? He goes, acid. And I was like, really? Why? He's like, man, that's what Hunter S. Thompson used to do, man. He used to go there, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It won't be Vegas. It'll be Reno. It's the same thing. You got to go there. The fucking Bird Show on acid is the fucking best. And I'm like, okay, cool. It sounds good. He's like, we know, but don't take the acid too early, man, because you take it before the plane, because then you're in this tube. You're in a metal tube flying through the air. It's just a bad trip, man. So you don't want to be smart and take it like as the plane's landing. I'm like, cool. All right, good. I got this. So, you know, we stay up on, I guess, to the airport on time. Everything's working. I got like a good little bit of acid with me. And I think, like, how much should I take? Like, one hit? Nah, just, that won't be enough. I just take two just to be safe, you know, because I'm like, whatever. Like, I think ahead. I plan ahead because I'm like a responsible drug user, you know. And so I take it as we're landing. And, you know, as the plane descending, I take it and everything's cool. And I get out of the, you know, you get off the plane and then get down to the baggage area. And, you know, there's my dad. My dad doesn't have any luggage. Okay, sure. But I have some. Like, so I'm getting mine. And so what's happening? What's going on? And then, you know, I start to feel that weird thing in my teeth. And then I had more of it back then. And so we're driving, and we're not driving anywhere. And I was like, man, the fucking strip in Reno is really in the middle of fucking nowhere, man. Like, I don't see anything around there. And I started to really pull in to this thing, and it's got this I tried to find the name of the actual name of it. I have not, but it was this very, like, Jesus-sounding name. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is not good. And, you know, this is not – a casino. And I walk into the rehab, and the door is open, and I get into this kind of living room type area, and my mom is there, and she has the yellow pad, the legal yellow pad. You know, she's written her letter on, and right then I start to try to get an idea about what this is. Now, mind you, we did not have the TV show Intervention back then. This was the 80s. Back then, if you wanted to get high, you'll get on TV. All you had was Cops. You know what I mean? And that was it. That was all we had. And my whole plan with that is like, okay, if you're getting wasted, just don't ever take your shirt off. Because that's how white guys end up on Cops. All right? And just like, you know, just a shirtless white dude. They're going, I don't know, these aren't my pants. Which was my favorite thing on that show. Like, why is this crack in your pants? Oh, not my pants. That's good. I love that logic. So yeah, we didn't know, like no one knew what it was, but right when my mom starts reading the letter is right when the acid starts to kick in, and she goes, your drug use has hurt the family in a far worse. No. So my plan is to bring them all to Circus and be like, hey, remember this place? Remember what? Oh, yeah, you don't remember it because we didn't go. Now you're here. And I've slipped you all acid. No, I won't do that. If I had more time, like later, I was trying to figure out ways to scam into rehab. Like 15 years later, I was like, I'll write a screenplay, I'll sell it, I'll use the money to get into rehab, because I'd heard of this friend of mine, like this old guy, like this is in the news, I'm not calling someone out, Tommy Swerdlow, went to rehab, he got strung out on heroin, went to rehab and wrote Cool Runnings. And I was like, okay, that's what I'll do. I'll write, you know, I'll get strung out and go to rehab and write a bobsled movie. That'll work. But yeah, that didn't work either. But I remember actually being mad at my parents, like later. And I was, what was the root of this rupture between the parents? I was like, oh yeah, they tried to send me to rehab when I was strung out on drugs. And, which wasn't a bad idea. But yeah, I was just the timing. You know what I mean? It's the timing. You should have given it to me later. Still, anyway, I should get off the stage. That's enough time. I'm going to thank you, everybody.